Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski. Everything sucks. Main event of AEW didn't suck. That's pretty good. Tonight. The very end of SmackDown last night did not suck. Commentary ruining it sucked, and I'll talk a lot about that. But yesterday during the day sucked. They released a lot of NXT talent, and a lot of 205 lifers. And 205 live is 205 dead. So we'll talk about all the releases and this company and their weird obsession with saving a few pennies while bringing in billions of dollars. We'll talk about that at the end of the show, but first let's talk about SmackDown. Let's talk about Hell in a Cell, because that was the pay-per-view last week. I don't know what to say, man. Back in my day, when I was a young whippersnapper, you see, the Hells in the Cells, they ended feuds. Those were the big blow-off matches, you see. And when you hated a man with a white-hot fury of a thousand suns, you hated a man so much, the only way you could get revenge on him, to put him out of your life for good, was to go inside Hell in a Cell. And beat him in Hell in a Cell. And then the feud would be over. A blow-off match, they called it, back in my day. But now, it's a bump in the road. So, not even just the Hell in a Cell match, the Hell in a Cell pay per view. Number one, don't call your pay per view Hell in a Cell. Just don't. Just have a Hell in a Cell match when the feud requires a Hell in a Cell match. Don't just throw it. Don't have Roman beat up Rey inside a cell for the hell of it, pun intended. Actually, you know, build to it. Do that. Could we do that? Or if you're gonna say, hey, you know what? This thing that's been going on between Bianca Belair and Bayley, we got to end things inside Hell in a Cell. And you know what? We're going to have the babyface champion retain her title inside Hell in a Cell. Clean. I mean, as clean as it can be when you drop somebody on her face on top of a table. But then have that end the feud. Don't rekindle the feud because you don't feel like you have anybody else to face the champ between now and SummerSlam. Why are we doing that? Figure out a way to do things. Figure out a way to build proper feuds. Figure out a way to build possible challengers who get a one-off title shot. Imagine that. Money in the Bank is around the corner. There are 8
spots in each Money in the Bank ladder match. Lemonade. How I have missed you. 8 spots in each Men in the Bank ladder match. 4 for Raw and 4 for SmackDown. On Raw, everybody gets in via a qualifying match. All the men have there's 3 singles matches. The winners of those matches got in. That's Ricochet and Riddle and John Morrison all got into the match. For some reason, the losers of those matches get a second chance when there's a whole bunch of other people who are literally out there begging for a first chance, but they can't get it. So there'll be a second chance. So all those men get in via matches. The women on Raw get in via tag matches. Right? So so the 4 women for Raw are Naomi and Asuka and Alexa and Nikki Cross, a butterfly superhero Nikki Cross. And they all get in. There are no second chance matches for the women. So there are going to be 4 matches to determine men on Raw and only 2 for the women, because women are half as important as men, according to Vince McMahon. Over on SmackDown, it's not an even playing field. Because people are getting qualifying matches, that's true. But I don't know that there's going to be a second chance qualifier. We don't know, because everything's just happening willy-nilly. And the women are just getting selected to be on there. One qualifying match for the men is going to be a last man standing match. Let's break it down from the beginning. In canon, according to Paul Heyman, both Ray and Dominic are acknowledging Roman as their tribal chief from their hospital beds. So they're in the hospital. Coup. They should be. I hope they're in there for months. Strip them of the titles. I don't need it. So Jimmy walks in to talk to Ray. Talk to Roman Reigns. Where's Jay? Well, I don't know where Jay is. Says Jay. He's a no-show. But I finally got in touch with him. I left like 100 voicemails and text messages. He finally got back to me. He says he's not coming back. He's not coming back to WWE. Which is, you know. Okay. So Roman's not happy about that. With everything I did for him, he's not coming back. He doesn't come to work. Jimmy's like, but I'm here and I got you. Family, I'm family for family. Listen, I'm nobody's bitch, but I'll help you out because we're family. We're blood. Are you trying to be my right hand man? You trying to do what your brother does for me? No, man. I mean, I'm not saying that. Oh, so you're saying you can't do what he does? No, I'm saying I can. Okay. So it's all mind games. Fine. I also am not entirely sure that Jimmy and Jay aren't plotting something behind Roman's back. I'm not entirely sure. I don't know. So if you can be my right-hand man, if you can do what Main Event Jay can do, then prove it, says Roman. And then later in the night, Jimmy's like to Paul, hey, what does he mean, prove it? Paul's like, win a match. Prove it by winning a match. You can win a match tonight. I'm gonna make that happen. I'll get you a match tonight. Win it. And he's like, fine, I can do that. Okay, but if you don't win the match, then there's gonna be problems. Okay. Whatever. Cool. I guess. Bianca comes out. She comes out. Hey, the match between them, Bianca and Bayley at Hell in a Cell, pretty good match. Pretty good match. Bayley's a great heel. It's amazing to me that, like, both she and Johnny Gargano in NXT were these baby faces that you couldn't ever imagine being heel. And then they turned heel, and they're both great at it. I'm kind of astonished at how effective she is at what she does, considering they don't really help her with any good creative. but the match between her and Ivanka was really great. It had a lot of interesting spots. They used the hair to maximum effect. A much better match than they had a month ago at WrestleBack Mania Lash, or whatever the fuck it was called. I love the finisher to the KOD on top of the ladder. Thought that was great. But it's still happening, guys. The match, that was it. That was it. I know they don't have anybody for Bianca to face in July before probably Sasha comes back for SummerSlam. But that's not my fault. That's their fault. They should have been building somebody up or have a number one contenders match to, like, see who gets a shot at Bianca. You know, like, they've released all these people and we don't really know anything, what's going on. It's just, man. Bianca comes out and talks about, you know, I can't wait to be in front of a crowd. Can't wait to whoop up on Bayley again. I'll never forget the pain that Bayley put me through, but it's all worth it because I walked out with a title and I'm so proud to be able to do that. And I beat her. It's me. I did it. I beat the bully and I beat the Bayley. Ding dong, the witch is dead, but we know for a fact that she's not dead. Because they booked Bayley versus Bianca again for last night in a mixed tag match, which you only do if you're continuing the feud. So it's Bianca and Cesaro versus Seth and Bayley. Now, Seth and Cesaro had a really good match. Hell in a Cell wasn't quite as electric as their Mania match, and Seth won because we can't just allow an organically over baby face to keep being over. We have to beat him. I mean, it was a clever roll up, you know, like a counter roll up into something, you know, a flash deal. It wasn't a distraction schoolboy or anything, but still a roll up, and then Seth, true to form, on SmackDown's coming out being like, I destroyed Cesaro, I beat him from pillar to post, which is only a phrase that Vince McMahon ever uses. Nobody ever says that. I know it's a phrase, but I swear you hear that in WWE promos way more than you hear it anywhere else. Pillar to post. So Seth is in denial about how he snuck out a victory over Cesaro. Okay, normal heel stuff. I get it. But what does it prove then that he won? He won. He beat Cesaro but he's delusional about how he won. So that's all we have, really. It's just a quick roll up win by Seth, proving nothing, and making us wish that they had just booked Cesaro to beat Seth again so we could move on and Cesaro could move up the card. But we can't because they booked him to lose. So Seth cuts a promo and has a good little interaction with Bianca, where he ends up like saying how what a great job she did. I mean, it wasn't as good as I did against Cesaro. Again, more delusion. But then he says that he wants to give Bianca a high five because after the match you're going to get beat up by Bayley, and then you won't want to high five me. So we should do it now. And Bayley comes down, and she and Seth have good chemistry. And she wants to fight Bianca. And Rollins tries to get in between them. So Bayley decides to use that interference to take advantage of Bianca being a stupidly written and booked babyface to beat her up. Cesaro comes out. There's a big brawl. Eventually, it's Cesaro and Bayley who get in each other's faces, and she's like, "How dare you ruin my ding dong hello segment?" is basically what she says. Now we get a mixed tag match. This is like a half hour segment. One quarter of the entire show is devoted to a promo from Bianca, basically saying, "Hey, did you see that? I beat Bayley, and now I'll never have to face her again." And then Seth coming out and saying, "Hey, did you see how I totally destroyed Cesaro?" Even though we all saw that he didn't totally destroy Cesaro. So it's them gaslighting us. Then a little mini brawl. Then the mixed tag match, which always is going to suck. Mixed tag matches always suck because men aren't allowed to get in the offense and women. But women are kind of on the men, but not really. Still have to do the whole tag in and out thing. It's kind of lame. And then at the end of the match, Bayley pins Bianca. Bianca, who hadn't been pinned in forever because they were protecting her, she got pinned by Bayley, which continues their feud. So Bianca, talking about how Ding Dong the Witch is dead, she's proven wrong that the witch isn't dead. Their feud continues after a Hell in a Cell match, which should never have happened. I'm not saying Hell in a Cell match should never happen. I'm saying them continuing the feud shouldn't happen. Bayley and Rollins are celebrating at ringside. Oh, there's going to be a coronation ceremony of Shinsuke Nakamura. The King of the Ring tournament is officially dead. Now it's just whoever is in possession physically of the crown. Whoever currently holds the crown is currently the king of WWE. There's no tournament to crown anybody. They had one 2 years ago, and Corbin won it, and then Shinsuke stole his crown, and they had a match about it, and now he's the king. It's fucking lame as shit. So there was that segment between Jimmy and Heyman, right? We talked about that. So Rick Boogs has a mic and his guitar. He gives a big introduction for Nakamura. And Nakamura comes out decked out all in white with like this weird kind of cloak jacket thing. It's interesting. He looks great. I love the look for Nakamura. I think that was really cool. But that's about all about this segment that is cool. He has the crown put on him. And Boogs screams while playing the guitar. He's the new king. And then Corbin is watching he's watching the backstage. Caleb Braxton's like, hey, Baron Corbin. Sorry. What are your thoughts? Well, I've lost it all, and not just my crown. What's the point? He says, and he walks off. And so, what is this now? What is this now? Literally, what is this now? Shinsuke Nakamura gets to be the king, and Baron Corbin is a whiny baby because he lost his plastic crown? Like, I don't know what any of this is supposed to be. Literally, what is any of this supposed to be? What is the point? Baron Corbin says, what's the point? And I say, I don't know, Baron. What's the point of any of this? What's the point? So Rollins comes in to talk to Pierce and Deville in the office. He says that the time is now. Now is the time. He says Roman is going to have a State of the Universal title address. And that subject is who's going to be his next challenger. Well, I am going to be the challenger, says Seth Rollins. I'm ready. Remember, more prepared in my life, because look at how I beat Cesaro. I beat him up. I beat him so easily, which again means you're delusional. No one on the roster deserves the chance more than me. Well, Adam Pearce says, well, we're not ready to make that decision yet. So, we'll take it under advisement. And so Rollins leaves. Okay. So here's the deal. Weeks ago now, a month ago now, Aleister Black came back, kicked Big E in the face. Then they released Aleister Black. Big E, that never happened to Big E. We never saw it happen because they can't reference it anymore. So it never happened. So Big E is just left to like, in limbo, still somewhere around the Intercontinental Championship while not actually feuding for it anymore. And that doesn't have to be the case, but they made it the case because there's literally anybody else in the roster that they could have. You know what was so cool about the qualifying matches on Raw? The one thing that Raw got right is they had a bunch of like a couple of first time ever matches to do the qualifying thing. Like Ricochet versus AJ has been a while. We've seen it before, but it's always been really good. And then there's we got to see Morrison versus Orton, who never wrestled each other somehow. And we got to see Riddle versus McIntyre, which I'm pretty sure we've never seen before. So, you know, that's cool, I guess, right? At least they're fresh matchups, or kind of fresh. What does SmackDown do? Big E versus Apollo Crews for this Money in the Bank qualifying match. It's not an Intercontinental title match. Crews is still champion, but the title's not on the line, which means, of course, he gets pinned. It's a non-title match. So the champion gets pinned because that's kind of what happens. Like that's how it works. So Big E finally gets his clean victory over Apollo Crews. It's a good match. These guys are really good together. Crews is really strong, and Big E's amazing, obviously. When they eject Dabba Kato in a fucking jacket from ringside, Big E comes right back off a distraction roll-up two count to get the big ending, like immediately, and qualify. So if this had been an Intercontinental title match, he would be the new IC champion again. But it's not. It's just a qualifying match for... You see what I mean? Like, they've had so many matches against each other this year. So you could have picked anybody for Big E to beat, and it wouldn't look like you're still continuing this feud, which you're not, but are you? Kind of. I'm not sure. Is Apollo Crews going to win a second chance match later? I don't know. Maybe. Perhaps. Not sure. You could have picked anybody to have Big E beat, and it would have been a fresh matchup. Not that I'm saying I want to see Big E beat this person, but like Big E versus Chad Gable would be kind of good. Wouldn't that be a good matchup? Have I ever seen it before? I don't know. Have I? I feel like I haven't, so therefore I haven't. If I feel like I've never seen it before, then it's new to me. Gable versus Big E would have kicked all kinds of ass and been something we haven't seen before. You could have Big E beat Chad Gable. Chad Gable's losing matches now on his way out of the company, probably. Fine. But instead, you have him beat Apollo Crews, but it doesn't really matter-ish, because if you were going to have him beat anybody to be in the Money in the Bank ladder match, fine. That's it. So he could have beat anybody to do that. But the fact that you have him beat Apollo Crews in an Intercontinental title match, non-title match, means it looks even worse. It makes it look even worse. He really does. So Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens had a pretty great match at Hell in a Cell. They always have great matches. They're incapable of having bad matches against each other. They know each other so well. At one point during the match, Sami Zayn does his running, leaping, tope con hero thing. And he lands directly on top of Kevin Owens' left shoulder. Like, right on top of it. From then on, Kevin Owens' left shoulder is completely dead. He can't lift his arm. He's gone. He can't do it. If it was a work, it's the most impeccably created work. If it was a worked injury, my God, it looked so real. Just great. And the fact that he couldn't use his left arm for the rest of the match, he could barely get a stunner in. Like, it was just, it was so good. And Sami Zayn won because he's facing a dude with one arm. And he's a smart guy. He's able to get a huluva kick and win against Kevin Owens. So Sami watches Kevin Owens, the highlights of that. Kayla Braxton's like, hey, what's up? You seem to be in a much better mood. Well, I'm looking for the future. Looking toward the future. Well, you're going to be in a Money Man qualifying match next week against Kevin Owens. And well, now it's conspiracy theories. What are you doing? Why are we messing with karma here? Why I beat Kevin Owens in Hell in a Cell. That should be over. And I'm like, yeah, it should, considering he was looking like he was dying from the pain in his left shoulder, and he tweeted something out about how I'm fine, I just got to go away for a while. And I'm like, oh no, Kevin, I hope you come back soon after shoulder surgery. That's what I thought that tweet meant. And it didn't. Because Sami Zayn goes to talk to Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce says, not only are you having a Money in the Bank qualifier against Kevin Owens next week, but it's going to be a last man standing match. Which is either two things. Somehow Kevin is fine, or they've told him, no matter what happens, it's not going to get any worse, but you do need surgery. Can you get through the pain? And Kevin Owens, because he's fucking Kevin Owens, says, sure. So they have their last man standing match, and it's brutal, and Kevin Owens loses, and Sami Zayn gets in the Money in the Bank ladder match, and Kevin Owens does get to go away. He's written off TV because of the last man standing match. Or it's a clever way of having him lose the match. Because the last man standing match, all that has to happen is that Sami Zayn, very early in the match, does something horribly underhanded to knock him out, or buries him underneath a bunch of debris or something. Runs him over with a forklift, because that happens on SmackDown all the time. You know, and then in a 5-minute last man standing match, Kevin Owens is out. My thing is this. Just have him be out after the Hell in a Cell match. If his arm is really hurt, just have him be out after the Hell in a Cell match. And then have Sammy beat somebody else to get in the Money in the Bank ladder match. I don't know who. Find somebody. You've got a roster full of people. Find somebody for Sami Zayn to beat. Somebody fresh. Somebody he hasn't faced, oh, I don't know, 900 times in the last 5 years. Sonya Deville walks down to the ring. She's going to name a woman who's going to be on the team. So women on Raw have to find a tag partner and then work as a tag team to win a tag match, and then both of them get in the ladder match. On SmackDown, Sonya Deville just walks to the ring and says, "You're in." How is that a thing? How is it the same company? I'm all for trying to like separate the two brands and make them different, I guess, but at what cost? Not this way. Not this way. She's gonna the first woman who is going to be in the match, the ladder matter match that I'm deciding is going to be the matter match because I have that power, is Carmella. And Carmella comes out and she says, I'm a 2-time Money in the Bank winner. I'm also not only that, but I'm also the most beautiful woman in all of WWE. And the canned fans boo. And she's like, oh, are you mad? No, it's people who booed into a microphone 6 months ago. They're not mad, honey. Nobody's mad. It's the fucking Thunderdome. So Liv Morgan comes out and says, wait a minute, I beat you last week. How do you just get a Money in the Bank spot? And Liv Morgan has a point. I know I belong on her but belong in the match way more than she does. And the mismatch is for the real stars. And so then Liv Morgan slaps Carmella in the face and they were going to fight back, but Sonya Deville's like, okay, fine. You know what? Here's a way to make a statement. How about if you think you deserve a spot, well, prove it by facing Carmella now. Don't worry, Carmella. I'm not removing you from the match. So Liv Morgan beats Carmella. Carmella has all the offense, and Liv Morgan only gets a two count with her finisher, but then gets a roll up for the win. And they didn't formally announce this, I don't think. Maybe they did and I missed it. I don't think they announced formally that Liv Morgan won a spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match by beating Carmella. Perhaps they did. It certainly seemed like it was, hey, Liv, beat Carmella and you're in, but they didn't outright say that. So who knows? It's WWE, nothing fucking makes sense. Maybe she'll have to beat somebody else next week. Maybe she'll have to, maybe by beating Carmella last night, she proved that she deserves another match versus Carmella next week. And if she wins that one, then she's in. Maybe that's what she proved. Because WWE fucking sucks. Michael Bungie, friend of the show, says that if they want to run it differently on each show, they shouldn't have the same authority figures. Yes, Michael Bungie, it is, as you say. Simple as that. It's very true. It's very true. Also very true, the Phoenix Suns just went up 3-1 over the LA Clippers in a horrendously ugly game. 84-80. So yeah, we'll see what happens going forward. Phoenix Suns team, when they play really well, they are very tough. They're very tough. And if they win this thing in five, I think they're gonna have a lot of rest before they face anybody in the finals. Anyway, she forces the ring announcer to announce her as still the most beautiful woman in WWE, even though she lost, which totally tells you the things that she values about herself. Carmella! Look, I know she's supposed to be a heel, but it's just so fucking vacuous. You know, like, I don't care if I won or lost as long as I'm still the prettiest is fucking awful. So Jimmy Uso, his match is announced as being versus Dolph Ziggler. And like, okay. I thought it was, while watching it, again, I'm just assuming because I watched Raw and every fucking match on Raw was a match for a spot in the Money in the Bank. I thought this was for a spot in Money in the Bank, but I guess it's probably not. Because why would Paul want Jimmy in the Money in the Bank ladder match? I don't know. It's weird. Jimmy Uso versus Dolph with Rude at ringside. And Rude tries to get involved, but he ends up getting knocked over the announce table by a suicide dive. And Ziggler like does a weird zigzag onto the ring steps. One point did not look good. But Uso wins with a really weird super kick. Like, Michael Cole did not call it as though that was the finish of the match. So he's like, super kick now by Jimmy, goes for the pin. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. I guess that's it. That was kind of weird. Like, he didn't say that, but that was the tone of his voice. So Jimmy Uso beat Dolph Ziggler. Like, that proves to Roman that he's good enough to watch his back. I guess. I don't know what that proves. I thought it proved he was in the Money in the Bank ladder match, but I guess he's not. So if you're scoring at home, one guy is in the Money in the Bank ladder match, and that's Big E. And one woman, I think only one woman is in the Money in the Bank ladder match, and that's Carmella, because Sonya Deville said so. And Liv might be, but maybe not yet. She beat Carmella to prove that she's good enough, but maybe not prove that, like, to earn a spot in it. So on Raw, like, everybody's fucking in it, but on SmackDown, we got lots of time. We got oodles of time. Let's just do it. So one of my big gripes on Raw was that they put everybody in the Money in the Bank ladder match a month ahead of time. Like, that's a long time to do shows where you don't have those matches to do. You could have spaced them out, but they didn't. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess that's how it's going to be. But on SmackDown, they are spacing them out, and it feels so weird for them to be spacing them out. A lot of it is because I don't know who else is in the matches. They haven't said who else is being considered to be in a qualifying match, when on Raw, all them bitches were in fucking qualifying matches from the start of the show. We knew who it was. It's just so weird that they don't treat them both the same. I don't. Okay. Anyway, Jimmy Uso wins his match. Now, he walks through the curtain and he says, "Hey, you know." He's so happy. He's happy that he won, and he hopes his cousin Roman's going to be happy, but he's not really. And he's going to walk, you know, walk with him. But Paul's like, no, just you're good. You did a great job, but he's going to handle this by himself. And so Jimmy's like, well, I want her to come too. So, Roman Roman and Paul slowly go down the ramp to the ring. We're at a commercial. They show what happened in the Hell in a Cell match last week. They're piping in Roman sucks chants, and Heyman says, no, the head of the table does not suck. So that was funny. Heyman is dropping names now, including the people who were gone. He's like, he made the Fiend. He frightened the Fiend. He something, he stomps Strowman. Kevin Owens couldn't do it. He stacked up Daniel Bryan and Edge and emasculated them. And then Daniel Bryan manned up and came back, but then he was shipped the hell out one more time. And then Cesaro, he couldn't, whatever. He's using alliteration and little funny phrases for everybody. And the Mysterios were all screwed up. Destroyed by Reigns. Reigns has taken out the entire division. There's nobody else. Nobody else. And I know, like, for me, before the big reveal, the person, like, the alarm bells were ringing this whole fucking time of, like, Big E. We all wanted Big E. Everybody said Big E. Big E's the guy for SummerSlam. Big E's the guy. Big E is the dude who's going to... He's right there. Groom him, put him on a win streak, put him in a place where he is inevitable. You can't say no. He has to get a match versus Roman Reigns because he's won all these matches in a row, and he's awesome. Big E is the dude. Big E is the guy to beat Roman Reigns. Why are we not talking about Big E? Big E, Big E, Big E, Big E, Big E, Big E, Big E. And the reason is because, unlike us, they don't see Big E as that kind of championship material. They think mid-card title is the ceiling for Big E, which is all that I need to know that everybody who's running WWE is as clueless as that writer they fired because she didn't know if it was Bobby Ashley or Bobby Lashley. Everybody in charge of creative decision-making in WWE should be fired, including Vince, if they think that Big E isn't a part of that division that Roman Reigns ran through. Idiots. Fucking idiots. That guy's so much money wrapped up in those giant pecs and huge thighs. Ridiculous. So there's nobody left that to do something that never before been done on network TV. They have no other choice but to do this. And we never found out what this was. I don't know what this was supposed to be. I don't know what they were going to do before Ed showed up. But Reigns is going to say something. It's never before been done on network TV. There's nobody left. We have no other choice. I don't know what they were planning on doing. But Edge's music hits, and Reigns turns and looks, and first he's confused, and then he's shocked once he realizes who this is, and then he very calmly unzips his track jacket and starts taking it off, like, damn it, now I'm going to have to break this old man again. I don't want to do that. That's not what I wanted to do today. He's perturbed. And it's so funny because as soon as he starts taking off his jacket, so does Edge. And it's like both of them at the same time say, you know what? It's a little hot in here. It's a little hot. A little stuffy. I'm going to take off my jacket because I feel like I'm sweating a little bit. So I'm going to take off my jacket. And here's the deal. As soon as Edge's music hits, I'm like, oh, shit, this is going to be good. And then the commentary starts. It's Edge! Edge is here! He's here! The Rated R Superstar! I was like, oh, fuck. I forgot. It's WWE. Like, if there was... Okay, so I know that these shows are the commentary part is written and produced for people who just tuned in this fucking second and have never watched WWE before. That's the only explanation. Because they started with, oh, it's Edge, the Rated R Superstar. We haven't seen him since WrestleMania when he lost to Roman Reigns in a triple threat match with Daniel Bryan. Like, if somebody's watching and they don't know who this is, maybe they have a friend who does, or maybe they can fucking Google it. Because you're ruining every bit of organic awesomeness that is Edge coming back with the same crazed look in his eye, but now his beard is fuller. Like, he hasn't shaved since Mania. And he is pissed. But like, he comes in. Oh, Edge is here. Oh, and he's all, he looks mean. Oh, and he takes down Roman Reigns, and they're fighting now, exchanging blows. Oh, to the outside. And Reigns, Edge is pummeling Reigns now, pummeling him. Now he's going to go over to the timekeeper's area and get a chair. Like, we can see all that shit. Are you commentating for the blind? Because if so, that's cool. Good for you. But there should be a separate audio track for that. We can all see the shit that's going on in front of our faces. No, Edge is going, and then you have fucking, like, somebody is yelling, and poor Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee, by the way, a breath of fresh air. I didn't talk about how he started using, remember Seth Rollins' glove? I say remember it because he wore a glove on his right hand all the time. He broke a finger like a year and a half ago. And so he was wearing a splint on it and wanted to hide that splint by wearing a glove. Okay. So then he didn't need the glove anymore because he didn't need the splint anymore. And he said, I don't want to wear the glove anymore. And they said, well, let's find a way for you to lose that glove. And literally in the match versus Cesaro Hell in a Cell, Cesaro ripped the glove off, I guess because he didn't like the glove anymore. And then he just threw it away. And Pat McAfee said he threw it like a piss missile. Pat McAfee's awesome. And if you notice, last night, Seth Rollins didn't wrestle with the glove. It's the first time in like a year and a half that he hasn't wrestled with the glove. So now he doesn't need the glove anymore. So now, canonically, it's a piss missile. It's no longer a glove, and you can't wear a piss missile. So they had poor Pat McAfee getting the act. They started yelling at him, call him the Rated R Superstar again. So in the span of, I shit you not, 12 seconds, they called Edge the Rated R Superstar three times. And they kept narrating everything that was happening. Like, we can see that he has the chair. We can see that there's a Superman punch by Reigns. Just let the shit happen. I would pay Peacock. I would pay the cock $20 extra per month if I never had to hear Michael Cole gibbering over the top of a fantastic moment like that again. It's just terrible. Reigns goes to get a chair to bring it in, and Edge hits a big spear, and then he puts Reigns' head on top of the chair and goes to get another chair, but Jimmy Uso runs in and tries to get involved, right? The one point that I think commentary might have been nice to be there is if they were able to tell me at the time, as they did, and I appreciate that, the one thing they said that helped me was them saying, Jimmy Uso in now, because if you could have fooled me and told me it was Jay. Because he's doing the same shit for Roman that Jay used to do, wearing the same attire. His hair is a little longer now than what Jay wears it as. But that's the same shit. Saving Roman. So they keep saying, Jimmy Uso all in, apparently. So Jimmy Uso is now replaced Jay. So are we just going to do the same shit with Jimmy and Roman as we did with Jay and Roman? Because that's not the thing I thought you were going to do. That's stupid. That's a bad decision. Don't do that. Don't just replace Jay with Jimmy and keep running the same fucking angles. That's bad. That doesn't help anybody do anything. Don't do that. Anyway, Edge spears Jimmy through the barricade. And then Reigns is able to get out and huddle at the top of the stage with Paul Heyman. And he's standing there at the top of the ramp on the stage as Edge yells into the camera, "Roman, where are you at?" And literally, if you just turned your head like this, you'd see him. He's standing right over there. Edge, he's standing right over there. "Roman, where are you at? I'm right here." Well, technically, Edge, so is Roman. Now, on Talking Smack this morning, they showed footage of Edge immediately after this walking into Adam Pearce's office and saying, "I want the one-on-one match that I am owed from winning the Royal Rumble. I want the match that should have happened at WrestleMania, me and Roman, one-on-one at Money in the Bank." And Adam Pearce says, "Yeah, sure, you got it." Because it makes sense. Also, because Edge's eyes are the eyes of a man who might murder somebody. Anyway, they show that footage to Seth Rollins, who's a guest on Talking Smack, and he loses his mind because he says, "They promised me that match to me. They promised that match to me. Me versus Roman at Money in the Bank." So that's how we're going to wind up getting Edge versus Seth Rollins at SummerSlam. Is Seth is going to take exception to the fact that Edge got the match he wanted and Money in the Bank. And Seth is probably going to interfere and cost Edge the title versus Roman because it's WWE and they don't know how to write a story that's not that. So there you go. That was SmackDown. Let's talk about all these releases from NXT and 205 Live. Right. Okay. Fourteen wrestlers and one writer. Now the writer thing, let's talk about that real quick. The people who were like, "You only think it's stupid, that you only think it's bad because she's a black woman and you don't want to see that in the writer's room." Like, no, I want to see way more of them. But the ones that the women, people of color, women of color in the writer's room is great. But I think they should know what the champion's name is that they're writing for. And I think that if they don't, they should be smart enough not to go on a podcast and say that out loud. I don't care who it is. White male, black female, don't care. If you should know the people, the names of the people you're writing for. And if you don't, you shouldn't go on a podcast and say, I don't know what the champ's name is. So there's that. They did fire her, I'm sure, for that reason. Here's who else they fired. Kurt Stallion, who barely got a chance on 205 Live, the current version of 205 Live, which looks nothing like the original. But he was at one point was number one contender for the Cruiserweight title. Well, Santos Escobar had it, and he had never appeared on NXT. The one time he appeared on NXT was to lose that title match. Curt Stallion's a great wrestler. He's going to get lots of work somewhere else. It's weird they never actually really used him. August Gray, who used to be Anthony Green, was used briefly in a Timothy Thatcher storyline and then did a lot of stuff with 205 Live and did some job work in NXT too. Seemed like a hell of a nice guy. So nice that he agreed to work a match on 205 Live after being fired. He was scheduled to have a match versus Ari Sterling, I think, on 205 Live, was fired, and then had the match anyway because they had nothing else to do for 205 Live since the other match also featured somebody. The other match that was planned for 205 Live also featured somebody that was fired yesterday. But what August Gray / Anthony Green did that was so great was like, attention, everybody. My match tonight on 205 Live has just been turned into a loser leaves town match. It's very clever. Tommaso Ciampa mentioned that on Twitter as well. Seems weird. He was one of those guys who had one of those weird contracts that weren't guaranteed or were like less than a year long or whatever. Also, Arturo Ruas, who was the capoeira guy from Lucha Underground, who I thought was had a really great look about him and a totally different fighting style. It would have been really interesting to see what he could have done in, let's say, the Diamond Mine or something. Like if they had an actual Brazilian capoeira fighter who also knew jiu-jitsu and shit. Like he was a Brazilian jiu-jitsu champion, right? Master. And they could have used him in that, but now let's fire him. The Singh brothers, remember them? Getting dropped on the announce table violently by Randy Orton a few years ago. Bollywood boys. Consummate professionals. Both of them were in the original Cruiserweight Classic. Just, you know, not really being used for anything right now. Jinder has graduated to having two stiffs who can't work but are very tall be his bodyguards whenever he gets on TV, so he doesn't need the Singh brothers, so they're gone. Arya Daivari, a 205 lifer. When they started the brand, he was on it. The only 205 lifer, the guy who started the brand and lasted this long to have never gotten a shot at the title. Like Gran Metalik and Lince Dorado got called up. Like, he never got a shot like Ari Daivari didn't. I mean, he's a decent wrestler, but apparently wrestling 10 years before he even got to WWE. Decent dude. I'm surprised they fired him only because WWE is going to need a guy to job out to Mansoor in front of the King of Saudi Arabia at the next Sands of Time. And because, you know, Daivari is his lineage is from Iran. Well, that's great because Saudi Arabia hates Iran. So remember that thing he did with his brother where they came out waving the Iranian flag? That was uncomfortable as fuck. Tony Nese, who 205 lifer, a former cruiserweight champion, the last of the pre-NXT era, because he lost it to Drew Gulak, who dropped it on NXT to Leo Rush, which is a weird name to think about. And he dropped it on NXT to Angel Garza, who dropped it at Worlds Collide to Jordan Devlin. And then a few months later was the pandemic. Tony Nese won the title at WrestleMania. He won the Cruiserweight title at WrestleMania versus Buddy Murphy. The last of that era, the last champion of that era. And never complained, always came to work, wanted to do stuff. It was a really good wrestler, high flyer, super strong. So we don't need you anymore. It's 205 dead now. We don't need you. Goodbye. Sorry, kid. Budget cuts. Tony Nese is right before he got he had been signed but had more indie dates left, and I saw him wrestle at the Armory in Waukesha, Illinois. I saw him wrestle Matt Cross, the former son of Havoc from Lucha Underground. It was great. I mean, I had already seen his work in Cruiserweight Classic, but he'd been signed. They were doing Cruiserweight stuff on Raw, but he had still a few more indie dates left to fill out. So one of his last shows he did before he was WWE full-time, I got a chance to watch him in person, and I walked up to his merch table, shook his hand, and told him good luck. Good dude. Seemed like a really good dude. Short, which is probably why he never got a fair shake in Vince McMahon's eyes. Ever-Rise got released. Now, I never saw the appeal of these guys until they started doing their own thing. Their social media show, Ever Rise Live, where they just are super highly caffeinated, talking a mile a minute, riffing off each other. They're obviously really smart, really funny dudes. And that show was only on like small little social media stuff, like on Twitter and stuff, and their own Instagrams or whatever. And then it got picked up like really recently. And was going to be on WWE's YouTube. Like, just got picked up. Also, they just started becoming a fixture on NXT TV. And they just showed on NXT this week that they have the potential to get over as babyface clowns without insulting our intelligence as adults. That's really hard to do. And a couple of days later, they fired him. Just fired him. They're obviously really good at a thing you suck at, which is intelligent comedy. Conan O'Brien just did his last show, his last late night show. And the last thing he talked about was that his entire career on his late night shows, he tried to marry the two ideas of smart and stupid at the same time. It's a really, really fine line to walk. But he always strived to be both smart and stupid at the same time. Ever-Rise can do that. It's hard to do. It really is. Speaking as a guy who worked almost exclusively in comedies on stage for a better part of my career as a theater actor, it's hard to do that. But when it works like nothing else in comedy. And Ever-Rise can do that. They can do that shit. They're able to do it. So you fire them. Like, what the fuck? They're going to be great somewhere else. I don't know where. Not again, one of those things. Not everybody can go to AEW. But I mean, you these guys like Tony Nese can show up at Impact tomorrow and be a fixture in their X division. Like he's really great, super high flyer, really strong, can go in the ring. Yeah, absolutely. Ari Daivari can do the same thing. August Gray, I'm sure, has a bright future on the indies. Singh Brothers can work all over the world. I don't know what Arturo Ruas can do. He can do whatever he wants. So like a black belt in Brazilian judo or some shit. Like he's fucking awesome. Curt Stallion can go right back to being one of the most in-demand guys on the indies. Or he could sign with somebody long-term. I don't know. Certainly good enough. But Ever-Rise will bring to wherever they go a thing that so few wrestlers have, and that is impeccable comedic timing and a brain for how to make that shit work within wrestling. And they're great hands. Like, it's a stupid thing to do to fire Ever-Rise. If only because they should be teaching other people how to do what they do. Ah, I see what you're doing there. Okay, here's what you do. What, you're waiting too long to do that spit take because it doesn't feel organic. Like, you need, don't do it too quick either, because seriously, there's the shit you can learn from people who have that timing to like, do you feel the internal clock going one, two, and then go? Like, you can teach that. And the people who have that innate sense within them, they can teach that to people. And there's a bunch of people in NXT and God knows on the main roster who could benefit from taking a workshop from people who understand comedic timing. But instead you wanted to fire these guys. They're the potential to be one of the best comedic acts in WWE in a long time. Also fired was the best comedic act in WWE in forever. It's Breezango. They fired Fandango. They fired Breezy. Breezango, the Fashion Police, are no more. Fuck you, motherfuckers. Breezango. Breezango is smart enough, subversive enough, to get multiple Twin Peaks parodies written, produced, and aired on national television. The Fashion Police shit they did was out of this world funny. It is one of the saddest things to me that they wound up back in NXT, Breeze and Fandango, and they never got to bring that up again. Do more of that. They have all that amazing stuff at their disposal in the PC. They could have done so much. Gosh, they did such great fucking work. They made the Ascension into really fun characters. They also had, I mean, I don't know, like, find me a better comedy match that also works as a wrestling match find me a better one than Breezango versus the Usos in Backlash 2017, where Tyler Breeze kept getting out of the ring and changing costumes. He was the janitor. He was an old lady. Like, and I swear to fucking Christ, there were three times in that match where I was positive, where they sold me a ticket on near falls with Breeze dressed as a grandma. Like, it was just so fucking great. They should have won that match. And then they never got another title match. Not only did they never become champions on SmackDown, they never got another title match. The crowd was super into them. They were so over as an act, Breezango was, in that match. And nothing. They lost that match. They never got another one. Which proves that it's possible to not just have endless rematches. It proves that Bayley doesn't need to have a match versus Bianca Belair at Money in the Bank. If Breezango didn't get a rematch after that match, nobody deserves a rematch. Because they were so fucking over. Breezango was such an amazing work of art. As a tag team, they were a work of art. They turned stupidity into an art form. It sucks that they never fully capitalized on Dango and Breeze. It really fucking sucks. Yeah. Also, my impression of two phone calls that happened yesterday afternoon. I'm not saying that I know who made these phone calls. There was some scuttlebutt that it was Nick Khan who was responsible for these things, but then maybe not. Johnny Ace, he might have been behind it. Not sure. I haven't heard. Just a couple of impressions of a couple of phone calls that happened yesterday. Okay. Hi there. Is this Roderick Strong? Hi. Yeah. I just wanted to say congratulations. Yeah. I mean, I see now that we decided to go through with this Diamond Mine, kind of an MMA-ish faction in NXT, and you're going to be one of the leaders of it. So that's great, right? And hey, you're going to be feuding for the Cruiserweight title with Kushida, one of the greatest wrestlers alive. You versus Kushida, going to have amazing matches. Also, tell your wife she's fired. Okay, bye-bye. Marina Shafir, not used very much. One of the four MMA horsewomen, along with Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler and Jessamyn Duke. Jessamyn Duke also let go. Marina Shafir, get the fuck out. We don't need you. Goodbye. That's Roderick Strong's wife. Roderick Strong just got back this week. Put in the forefront of a hot new angle on NXT. Also, tell your wife she's fired. Tell her to pack her shit and get out. Phone call number two. Hey, Nikki Cross. Hi, good to hear from you. I just wanted to touch the base. Okay, so first of all, gotta say, I love the enthusiasm. This whole superhero butterfly, believe in yourself, this whole gimmick. I think it's great. I think it's really going to get over with the fans. I think it's awesome. Also, congratulations, being put in the Money in the Bank ladder match. That's really going to do wonders for your career. Also, your husband is fired. Goodbye. Killian Dane, fired. Killian Dane, who's been doing great work with Drake Maverick. Drake Maverick now in limbo. Like, his whole deal, and believe me, I loved it. Oh, this fucking tag team was great. The interplay between them was excellent. They were telling a long-term story between Killian Dane and Drake Maverick. Drake Maverick fired last year, but a tearful video on social media got a lot of buzz. He was brought back and then put in a tag team with Killian Dane. There was a great little tag team, a lot of fun. I don't know what this is for Drake Maverick now. He's got to get another guy to work with because he can't work by himself. Not with the way they're booking him. Killian Dane, super talented, proved that during his run with Sanity. Sanity now, basically all that's left is Nikki Cross. All that's left. And she's now on Raw. For better or for worse, she's a butterfly superhero who really believes in herself, which is a long ways away from the Sanity Nikki Cross, the one we saw in NXT, the one who had an amazing Last Woman Standing match with Asuka on NXT TV in 2017. They brought up Sanity as a group, the three of them, but not Nikki. She stayed in NXT. They brought him up and they had him immediately start off against the New Day. Perfect, right? New Day, a trio. Sanity, a trio. Sanity had all kinds of momentum carrying in NXT. They brought him up, had him lose that first match versus New Day, and they never recovered. They never booked them right again. They had Killian Dane start wearing a singlet. It just didn't work. It was so bad they had to break up the group. They shipped Alexander Wolfe to NXT UK. They had Eric Young stay on Raw, but just as a jobber, like he never actually had matches. And they sent Killian Dane down to NXT. Eric Young was released last year. Alexander Wolfe was released like a month ago. Now Killian Dane, Big Damo, who's really fucking talented, didn't deserve this shit. Like watch some of his shit that he did. Like I'm sure you can find it still on YouTube. WCPW. He's just a really fucking great wrestler. And they never let him really be what he was, except for a couple of times in Insanity. And it is Insanity that they refused to use a great wrestler. You're a wrestling company. And you decide the wrestlers are just not worth it. One of the things that Tony Nese said was that he's been seeing a lot of people commending him and, you know, like saying they have really great memories of his match versus Buddy Murphy at WrestleMania. And he says a lot of people, you know, it's really great that everybody has his memories, but if you want to see something really great, watch the rematch for the title that we had on the next the episode after Mania of 205 Live. That was the match we wanted to do at Mania, but they wouldn't let us. Because it was going to, you know, take the shine away from the other boys. But we realized that we could do it on 205 Live and nobody would stop us because nobody in the building watches 205 Live. Which might be, you know, a joke. But also there's some truth to it. And if I remember correctly, and I'm going to go back and watch that match because he said so. If I remember correctly, that was a fucking great match and better than the one they had at WrestleMania. Um, 205 Live was a really special thing. Because nobody want, I feel like nobody wanted it to succeed. They didn't do anything with it. They could have taped the thing at Full Sail. This is years ago now. Obviously, it wouldn't work now. But years ago, they could have said, you know what we're going to do? When we do NXT tapings, we're also going to do matches for 205 Live. We're going to do it in front of a rabid, hot crowd that loves watching high work rate wrestling. We're going to tape it. It's not going to be 205 Live anymore. It's going to be 205 taped. But at least we won't run it in front of 1/8 full SmackDown audiences that are only sticking around because, you know, it's free wrestling. Guess we better. There were so many matches that I watched on 205 Live that were just absolute, just mesmerizing classics. And there's like 14 fucking people there. Because WWE never got behind the product. So why would anybody stick around to watch it? Everybody who started on 205 Live is gone. I mean, some of them are still with the company. A lot of them are still on Raw, like, you know, Lince Dorado, Grand Metalik, Cedric Alexander, Drew Gulak, Mustafa Ali. But a lot of them are gone from the company. But nobody is still on the show. They have four wrestlers who are on 205 Live. Four. Everybody else has been released. The joke was 205 dead because nobody stuck around to watch it and nobody cared to watch it who had the network. Nobody watched it. But that was a joke back when the matches were great and people needed to be watching it, but they weren't. And now it's like you had to cancel one of the two matches on the most recent episode because you had released one of the people who was in it. And you had actually released one of the two people in the other match, but he was good enough to stick around and lose a loser leaves town match. WWE and their hiring and firing practices remain the absolute fucking dirt worst. They hire people who don't know anything about wrestling to write for them. Think they don't have to do any research about. Imagine hiring somebody to write for, like, I don't know, the sixth or seventh season of a show, and they show up and they never bother to learn the names of the main characters they're writing for, or, like, you know, the history of the characters and their interrelationships, and they're like, oh yeah, I was writing for like season seven of Lost. What was the guy's name? Steve? Jack. Jack? Jake. Jake? I don't know. He was the guy with the dark hair. Like, can you imagine somebody saying that? They wouldn't, because you wouldn't hire somebody to do that. Have some fucking self-respect. Hire better people to work for you. And also stop firing people who do good work for you. Use them better while you have them. Going to miss a lot of the people that got released yesterday, more so than some of the ones who have recently been gone, because I feel like there's a lot of untapped potential, seriously untapped potential in these NXT releases, because they were only in NXT, back in NXT, or who never got out of 205 Live. They're only there because literally nobody let them be. Nobody let them really show what they could do. And that's a tragedy in this business. This business. So yeah, while it's awesome that Edge is back and he's going to have a great match versus Roman at Money in the Bank, and that's going to lead to Edge versus Seth Rollins at SummerSlam, and Edge can get revenge on Seth for like 7 years ago, where Seth tried to murder Edge, and that's some serious long-term storytelling. I'm like only 50% sure that they're actually even going to bring that up, because they don't value long-term storytelling. And the reason you can tell they don't value long-term storytelling is that they hire people to tell stories for them who won't do enough long-term research to find out the name of the WWE champion. And then they fire a whole bunch of people who have all kinds of long-term stories left to tell in their future. This company, man. This fucking company, man. That was Sour Graps. This has been your host, Alex Pawlowski. Until next time, everything sucks.